This episode of The Transmission is brought to you by Audible.com, the leader in spoken word entertainment.
Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. For details, go to audiblepodcast.com/transmission.
Where do you get electricity?
We have two giant hamsters running in a massive wheel at our secret underground.
Yeah, there. That's funny.
Aloha from the Island Lost fans. You are tuned into The Transmission. This is a podcast devoted to the show Lost on ABC. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan. And we hope you enjoyed the audio from the first masterclass on Lost from the Hawaii International Film Festival last week. And we've got two more coming up. But this week, it's back to our season three review.
Up next, we'll quickly recap the next three episodes from season three, which are episodes 13, 14, and 15. And then we'll share our thoughts.
Next, we'll hear your feedback on the episode in You All Everybody.
We'll hear another song from the Others Lost band.
And finally, we'll cover the last 2 weeks of Lost production here on the island in the forward cabin. So, you ready?
Let's get lost.
All right, well, we're heading into the second half of season three, starting with The Man from Tallahassee.
John Locke is at a government disability office. The woman at the counter tells him that she is suspending his benefits because he stopped going to therapy. Later, as he's at home watching expose on TV, a man named Peter Talbot comes to see him about his mother, who is about to marry Anthony Cooper. Locke says he never met him and can't help him.
Locke goes to meet Anthony in a flower shop and tells him that his fiancée's son is onto him. He tells Anthony to call off the wedding or he's going to tell her the truth. Anthony agrees. Locke is then visited by two cops who tell him Peter Talbot's family is worth $200 million and that he's dead. So Locke goes back to Anthony and accuses him of killing Peter.
Anthony says his fiancée called off the wedding because of her son's death. He tells Locke to call and confirm it, but when Locke turns to use a phone, Anthony pushes him through the window and Locke falls 8 stories to the ground. The cops show up at the hospital bed and tell him that Anthony disappeared. We see his panic as he's put into a wheelchair.
On the island, Kate, Saeed, Locke, and Danielle are watching Jack with the others. They see Jack shake hands with Ben, and Saeed says, well, maybe Jack doesn't want rescuing. Locke says they'll go in after dark and give Jack the choice. Kate tries to talk to Jack, but she's captured as well as Saeed. Locke, meanwhile, goes to Ben looking for the submarine.
Tom and Richard show up, and Locke hides in a closet with Alex. Ben tells Richard to get the man from Tallahassee. When they leave, Locke tells Alex to get Saeed's backpack. Locke helps Ben out of bed, and Ben tells Locke that he knows Locke wants to destroy the submarine. Locke says Ben doesn't know him, but Ben tells Locke his whole life story.
Ben asks Locke about his recovery from paralysis, and Locke points out that Ben isn't recovering very fast and shouldn't have gotten sick in the first place. Ben tells Locke that his people need the illusion that they can leave. He says that he knows Locke is committed to staying and talks about a magic box.
Locke says Ben and his people have been cheating, being able to come and go from the island using electricity and guns. He says they don't appreciate the island. Alex returns with Saeed's bag, and Ben tells Locke about his deal with Jack. Ben says communications are cut off so Locke can let the sub go and no one will find the island. But Locke heads for the sub anyway.
Meanwhile, Jack goes to see Kate. She asks what they did to him and Jack says he made a deal to go home. He says he trusts them because Kate told him to trust them in order to save Sawyer. Jack then goes to Ben and asks him to let Saeed and Kate go. Ben says he will as soon as Jack leaves the island, and Juliet thanks Ben for keeping his promise.
They go to the submarine dock and they run into Locke there. Locke says he's sorry and the sub explodes. Later, Ben goes to Locke and tells him that he solved his problem with Jack, but he says that Locke has a strong communion with the island and that he wants to help him. He then takes Locke to show him what came out of the magic box, and it's Anthony Cooper.
Whoa! Next is expose, and in flashback, Nikki is working at a strip club. She goes in back to confront Mr. Lashad, who's revealed to be the Cobra. He shoots her, and cut! It's an episode of expose and Nikki's last episode on the show. The next morning, Nikki and the director are having breakfast prepared by Paolo, and the director, Howard, gives her a bracelet, then suddenly seizes up and dies.
Nikki and Paolo raid his safe, and at the airport, they toast their new life, reading about the director's death in the newspaper and watching Boone and and Shannon bickering. We jump ahead to the plane crash, and Nikki runs through the wreckage, finding Paolo staring out at the sea. She asks him where the bag is. As they pick through the luggage, Ethan comes up to them.
Ethan tells them that some stuff may have fallen inland, and after Jack gives his big speech, Nikki goes to Dr. Arts asking for help. They follow his map into the jungle and find the Nigerian drug plane. Paolo refuses to climb up to it. They then find the Pearl Station, and Nikki refuses to climb down into it. They reach the waterfall, and Paolo dives in.
He finds the bag, but he tells Nikki that there's nothing there. Paolo tries to bury the bag on the beach when Locke comes up to him and tells him that things don't stay buried on this island. So Paolo goes back to the Pearl and hides the diamonds in the toilet in the bathroom. Ben and Juliet show up and watch Jack in the Swan on the monitors. They leave, and Paolo grabs their walkie-talkie.
Later, when Locke leads a group into the Pearl, Nikki and Paolo volunteer to go. Paolo then can go into the bathroom and retrieve the diamonds. The next morning, Paolo tells Nikki that not finding the bag kept them together. When he goes to get some breakfast, though, Nikki finds his nicotine gum wrapper. She goes to Sawyer for a gun, but he won't give her one.
Nikki takes Paolo into the jungle and demands the diamonds. She throws one of Dr. Arts' spiders at him, and they bite Paolo. He collapses, and she finds the diamonds in his pants. Suddenly, she hears a clicking sound, and then she's bitten by the spider. She runs through the jungle, buries the diamonds, collapses on the beach in front of Sawyer and Hurley, saying, "Paralyzed."
Or something like that. Then the story picks up moving forward. Hurley says she's dead. Charlie and Son arrive and try to figure out what she said. Plywood, power lines, or Paolo lies. Then they eventually find Paolo in the jungle.
Jin suggests it was the monster that killed him, and Hurley agrees, saying, "Echo told Locke, you're next." They bring their bodies to a beach graveyard and check out their tent. They find Dr. Arts' bugs, the expose script, and a walkie-talkie. Sawyer says the others had those walkie-talkies, so Nikki and Paolo must have been working with them.
Hurley says the others are too far away to do that, but Sun says they were close enough to kidnap her. Sawyer grabs a gun and heads into the jungle. Hurley asks Desmond if he can use his psychic powers to find out what happened, and Desmond says he saw Nikki arguing with Sawyer. Meanwhile, Charlie confesses to Sun about kidnapping her.
Sawyer returns, and Hurley confronts him. Sawyer says Nikki wanted a gun, but that he didn't say anything because he knew that Nikki had buried something. He throws Sun a bag of diamonds. Sun tells Sawyer he knows it was his idea to kidnap her, but she won't tell Jin because he would kill Sawyer. She gives him the diamonds back, but slaps him.
Hurley then presides over the funeral for Nikki and Paolo, and Sawyer throws the diamonds in with them, and they start to bury them. But just before the sand covers Nikki's face, her eyes open, but they finish burying them and walk away.
Now, on to Left Behind. In flashback, Kate is in Iowa to see her mom when she meets Cassidy running a scam. Kate saves Cassidy from being busted, and Cassidy offers to help Kate. Cassidy pretends to be Kate and gets taken in by the marshal to feel out the situation. Cassidy says Kate is obviously in big trouble and demands to know why.
Kate confesses to killing her stepfather, who she says was a bad man. Kate then goes to see her mom at work at a diner and asks why she turned her in. Kate's mom tells her that she loved her stepfather, Wayne, and if she sees Kate again, she'll yell for help. As Kate leaves Iowa, Cassidy tells her that she's pregnant with a child of her own bad man.
On the island, Hurley goes to Sawyer and says there's going to be a vote to banish him. Sawyer laughs it off, but after he catches a fish and is unable to gut it, he tells Hurley that he wants to try and make amends after all. So Hurley encourages him to give a blanket to Claire for Aaron. Then he goes to hunt a boar with Desmond.
When Sawyer delivers the boar to the camp, Charlie says he doesn't know anything about a vote. Sawyer confronts Hurley, who explains that with Jack, Locke, Kate, and Saeed gone, Sawyer needed to do some damage control so he could lead everyone. Sawyer asks, "What if I don't want to lead?" But Hurley says he doesn't have a choice.
Meanwhile, back in Othersville, Kate and Juliet fight. Then Locke comes to see Kate and tells her that he is going with the others. Locke says he wanted Kate to come too, but the others told him what Kate had done. He leaves, and Kate looks out the window and watches all of the others put on gas masks.
A canister gets thrown into the room, and she passes out to the gas. She wakes up in the jungle, handcuffed to Juliet. Kate says they have to go back, and walking through the jungle, it starts to rain. They argue about Jack and fight, and Kate dislocates Juliet's shoulder, but they hear the smoke monster and run. They hide in a tree as the monster scans them, but goes away.
Juliet tells Kate that Jack saw her and Sawyer together and that Jack wanted to leave because she broke his heart. Then she makes Kate help her put her shoulder back in. They hear the smoke monster again and run. Juliet unlocks the handcuffs and activates the sonic fence. The smoke monster hits it and again disappears into the jungle.
Juliet tells Kate that she just wanted her to think that they were in it together so she wouldn't get left behind again. They get back to Othersville and Kate finds Jack and tells him that she's sorry and shouldn't have come back for him. They find Saeed and Saeed says they can't bring Juliet with them, but Jack says they will because they left her behind as well, and they head out.
And thud. Thud.
And that's episode 13, 14, and 15 from season 3 of Lost in, I guess, about 9 minutes. We'll take a short break to catch our breath, and then when we come back, we'll share our thoughts on these episodes.
We can't wait to talk about these episodes from season 3 and get to your feedback in you all, everybody. But first, we want to let you know that today's podcast is sponsored by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider in spoken word entertainment.
Audible has over 50,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and played back anywhere, anytime, just like the transmission. And thanks to Audible.com, you can get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today.
There are a lot of books mentioned on Lost, mm-hmm. and many books that can deepen your understanding and appreciation of the show, and Audible.com is a great way to dive into them. For example, you can pick up as your free audiobook a title that was recommended to us by a listener.
That's right. Zoe Staggs, who's a writer herself, writes, I was cheating on the transmission with a new audiobook this weekend, Eating the Dinosaur by Chuck Klosterman, and the title chapter, which I believe is the second one in, discusses time travel and 8 myths or principles of it as it relates to Lost and the movies Primer and Donnie Darko. He's a great writer in general, but that part might be of particular interest to you guys.
I've actually read a couple of Chuck Klosterman's mm-hmm. books. He's really fun. He dissects pop culture and that kind of stuff. And in this book, in addition to Lost and time travel, he dissects the boredom of voyeurism, the reason why music fans inevitably hate their favorite band's latest album, or why we love watching superstars fail miserably.
So this audiobook is narrated by the author himself. He also has some guest readers. They include Ira Glass from NPR and Errol Morris,
wow.
Who's a documentary, and he actually made some Apple commercials or Mac commercials as well. And you can make it your free pick with this offer. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/transmission.
That's audiblepodcast.com/transmission.
And we definitely want to thank Zoe Staggs for the recommendation.
Yes, thank you.
All right, so let's get back to our rewatch in these last 3 episodes that we definitely enjoyed, I think, going back to again. We'll start with The Man from Tallahassee. What did you think of the episode?
One of my all-time favorites, easily in my top 10.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, Locke episodes in general are great. You know, you find out so much about both Locke and you know you're given also a little bit of a puzzle piece about the island. And we had been wondering for so long what happened to Locke. Mm-hmm. Why was he in the wheelchair? And to finally know was a huge, huge piece of the puzzle.
Oh, absolutely. I remember actually feeling viscerally in me when he hits the ground. I mean, it's one thing to know or suspect why he might be paralyzed, but to have it depicted and rather dramatically definitely was a high emotional point for the entire series. I just kind of like, you know, with season 5 eyes going back and seeing certain interactions and how they may or may not have had an impact on these characters. Obviously, you know, Kate seeing Jack with Juliet, you know, why aren't they at each other's throats? Why do they actually seem kind of friendly? Jack uh-huh. shaking hands with Ben. And really when they're out there watching them in Othersville, when Ben gets wheeled out in a wheelchair, when they're sitting in the, you know, in the bushes watching
right.
them, I really would have expected, or I'm, you know, really looking for a reaction out of Locke.
Right.
Because given Locke's history, why he should almost freak out to see Ben in a wheelchair.
See, so. This completely did not enter my mind during season 3. Mm-hmm. But I'm feeling it more and more now, and I don't have any evidence really to support this, and I can't say that it's true, but I really feel like at this point there are 2 Locks.
Already at this point in the storyline.
Yes.
Well, you know, that's what season 5 does to us. It's how far back does Locke as someone else or Locke under some other strange influence begin? And you can almost start to see it everywhere. But mm-hmm. I think the conversation in particular that he has with Ben
in the kitchen
is key to that.
Yes, exactly. When he says, you guys are fakes, you have chickens in your fridge and you have electricity. It sounds very much like a voice of somebody who's been there a long time.
Right. I mean, when we see it the first time, we figure, well, he's a blind believer in the island. He'll do anything to be with the island. He's just sort of guessing at this higher meaning. But now we're thinking maybe he really does have, as Ben says, not just a communion with the island, but a deeper understanding than we had
any
idea.
As if he had been there forever.
Absolutely. I also thought that it was kind of interesting, again, back when they're just in the bushes trying to figure out what's going on, I was surprised that Locke defends Jack. You know, Saeed's like, mm-hmm. You know, maybe he doesn't want rescuing. Obviously, the situation has changed. And it is Locke who makes a strong case and says, no, there must be a reason for Jack to be acting like that. You know, we're going to give him the option to escape with our help. But for him to defend Jack, given how they're
usually put. That is very un-Locke-like, I have to admit.
So, I mean, whether it was out of character or not, or whether because there's something else going on there, I really like that interaction. But, of course, any episode with Locke is made even stronger with Ben in it. And you mentioned that conversation in the house. All of their sort of chess game conversations that they have are great. So that was definitely a high point of this episode. And just the way that we as a viewer know what's going on in Ben's head when Ben says, oh, Jack, I'll be happy to let your friends free as soon as you get off the island. Or the way Juliet gives him a really heartfelt thank you for keeping your promise. And Ben's very gracious about it. But you know that he knows at that moment exactly what's about to happen to the submarine.
This is Locke's episode, but I think Ben really steals the show.
Well, he's got some killer lines.
Yeah, we have two giant hamsters running on massive wheels in our secret underground
lair. That's right, which is sort of true. At least there are secret underground lairs with strange powers, at least.
Or, no, John, there's no code for there's a man in my closet with a gun in my daughter's head. And that's not even the funny part. It's the way he says, although we obviously should.
Right. Well, you know, that again, that conversation, and whenever you have Michael Emerson and Terry O'Quinn together, or even Michael Emerson or Terry O'Quinn and Matthew Fox, just those conversations are definitely among the best. I liked when Locke just sort of looks up to Ben and says, you got anything to eat?
Uh-huh.
Which is to me an exact mirror of the episode ending line,
right,
that Ben gives.
You got
in the
any milk?
Yeah, you got any milk? So just those conversations are worth going back to enjoy, certainly. Now, we have the idea of the con, and it was interesting that Alex articulates it. You know, he says, Ben is so good that whatever you do, he makes it so you think it was your idea. And that's something that's been coming into play with the motivations and messing with all of these characters,
like
whether it's
getting
Ben
on another plane and coming back to the island you just left.
Or that, yes. Yeah. Or just, you know, even Sawyer, I think, has said similar things as well. So again, a repeating theme, another repeating theme. I thought the imagery of when Locke gets to the submarine and he opens it up and he peers down into the hole and the camera pulls back, that is a mirror image, I mean, clearly meant to invoke the very end of the season finale of season one, where they first find the Swan and get that sucker open. So, you know, I just kind of like these themes that continue in on the show. There was kind of an intriguing line, I thought, when just sort of gets thrown offhand when Kate is talking to Jack about what's going on and how everybody is. Jack says that the kids are safe.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, again, the kids just sort of vanish somewhere in season two, I think. And they just sort of get mentioned periodically. They did show up earlier this season
with Cindy.
But again, it's one of those things that I hope that they pay off in season six. They've got to figure out what's going on with those kids.
And I mean, he says safe. He doesn't say thriving healthy. He says safe, and I don't know, just that word really sets off bells in my head.
The line that struck me in this rewatch that I don't think really caught me earlier was Ben talks saying to Locke about, you know, let me help you out of the bed, and Ben says, you know, I just want a little bit of dignity. You should understand that, of all people. And they definitely did a very strong emotional scene with Locke when he gets put into the wheelchair for the first time. He's all beat up, he's panicking, it's gut-wrenching, but I mean, you know, Locke's story unfortunately gets worse from that point forward too. So kind of that idea of being humiliated, being or wanting dignity, I definitely think that even gets stronger between these two characters moving forward from season three. Anything else that caught your eye or attention?
Well, the episode ends with Locke saying, Dad?
Ah, that's right, which happened before.
Right, and it's back in season two when Michael is about to communicate with who he thinks is Walt on the computer. You see Dad
on the screen.
It's not said,
but yeah, that's true. The second episode where the episode ends with the word Dad. The only thing that kind of, you know, set off a little spark at the back of my head is that this is still early on in Richard's development. Richard Alpert, who we now know in season five, is a much more deep, interesting character with a long history with the island. But
yeah,
I'm wondering if they knew that about Richard in this episode, because
why?
They kind of deploy him more as a thug,
as a muscle.
Yeah. And he actually says to Locke, you know, when they've got him locked up, he says, "You're going to do anything stupid?" And
yeah, that doesn't really sound like something.
Yes,
yeah.
It doesn't sound like the Richard we know now. But I think that maybe they were still trying to play out what really his significance would be. But overall, The Man from Tallahassee, pretty decent episode.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, now we have to take a deep breath, because the next episode is Exposé.
Very controversial.
Very controversial. Now, I am a longtime fan and definitely outspoken apologist for Exposé. So before we get to my opinion, what did you think about rewatching, going back to Exposé?
I have a real love-hate relationship with this episode. I love it because it's brilliantly written and smart and funny and just it's very Hitchcockian, mm-hmm. Twilight Zone-y, but in a really interesting way. On the other hand, it did absolutely nothing to move the story forward.
I mean,
we've had episodes before that really didn't move the plot forward, and that was okay. But I was really hungry for answers. I was really starving for information, and when this episode aired, I just felt really frustrated.
I can definitely agree with you that if there's any episode that not only didn't move the plot forward, but actually seemed to revel in its stationary position, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, when I thought, I'm like, well, what did move forward in this episode? Well, we had the Charlie confession to Sun and the Sun threat to Sawyer and a few other things with everybody else on the island. But for the most part, yes, this was a stuck in place episode, and the frustration I can definitely appreciate. And this goes back again to the people who really hated Nikki and Paula, who were never going to be welcomed. They were introduced awkwardly. They were handled awkwardly. There was no way things were going to end for them well.
Right.
So for me, though, taking all of that into account, I loved Exposé because, in my opinion, this episode of Lost wasn't really an episode of Lost.
I mean,
you touched on it with the Hitchcock and Twilight Zone. This was an episode about Lost. This mm-hmm. was the first and only, I would imagine, episode of our favorite show where they took an extra step back and looked at itself. I mean, it was breaking down the fourth wall, as they say. It was a meta episode.
Yeah.
Meta episode.
So I can appreciate it for that on
right.
that level.
I mean, it's the winking at the camera without actually winking at the camera. They won't, I don't think, ever get anywhere like this again. They definitely took a big risk playing with this episode, and I can see again why people might not like it. But for me, as a fan of Lost, I felt like I was watching an episode of Lost made for fans of Lost. So mm-hmm. to that end, I just couldn't stop giggling giddily like a schoolboy with every little trick. You know, yes, the logistics of having to recreate scenes we've seen before, including setting up the plane crash and setting things on fire.
I know that had to cost a fortune.
Yeah, and basically inserting them in other scenes. And I can see that from a plot point of view, there's a great deal of frustration that Nikki and Paulo, say, found the pearl first or mm-hmm. found the Nigerian drug plane first. And like, oh, why didn't they tell anybody? So plot-wise, again, there's a lot here to pull your hair out or over. But come on, you got Billy Dee Williams, for one.
Yeah, brilliant. Of course.
And he gets to be himself in an episode of Lost. How could that ever happen in any other scenario that we have? And then you have some really great, almost too on-the-nose lines about television in this episode.
We all know what happens to guest stars.
Right, or we can just bring you back next season. Or, you know, of course, Hurley is a devotee of this show, of Exposé. He says, it's the most awesome hour of television ever. And the line about Paulo, which is almost a double reference, because Paulo was he was a well-known actor in where he came from.
He was described as the Tom Cruise of Brazil.
That's right. So they can make fun of him, the actual actor in the show, on the show. So again, I really feel and understand all of the frustrations with this episode. And I think if I took it a little more seriously, I'd feel that way, because they were almost, I think, again, too jokey. But I couldn't help it. I felt like the creators of Lost were having fun. And that's mm-hmm. why I was having fun.
Yeah.
But there are, you know, little nice touches that I thought were pretty significant. I mean, we see when she pulls off the shoe, they explain when they find the
right.
shoe hanging in the tree. But
right.
but a shoe in a tree is an image from the very first scene.
Right. It's a different shoe. But
right. But it's kind of an iconic image
yeah.
in Lost. So I thought it was kind of cool that they brought that back. For you, on Exposé, anything that you liked or didn't like specifically?
The wigs in this episode are so bad.
Boone's hair was definitely
yes.
kind of shaggy.
Yes, and Shannon's hair in the pilot is much shorter. I mean, it's a good 3 inches shorter, and it's not that big, you know? I mean, just the volume of it. Is it so hard to get good wigs?
I guess. Well, you know, I, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure through the entire history of Lost, there have been issues with hair. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's just kind of a weakness of our local hair prop department or something. Unfortunately, the hair was not brought up during the master classes, of all things to ask. But, okay, well, that's certainly a fair complaint. But, you know, well, let's see. I liked that the whole conversation, as far as plot moving forward, where Sun and Charlie and Sawyer have to come clean about being kidnapped.
Right. And I don't know, Sun says a really revealing line. She tells Sawyer that if Jin knew about this, that he would kill Sawyer.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I don't know. I guess I didn't ever really picture Jin being violent in that way.
Well, my question on that is, you know, we have seen a reversal from Jin being the mean hitman to being a guy with a heart. You know,
right.
He's a good guy. Whereas Sun's become kind of a cold-blooded killer.
Uh-huh.
So is there going to be an opportunity ever left in season six? I don't think so, for this mystery to become revealed and for it to pay off. I don't, you know, unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, when she says she's not going to tell Jin, I think that's
pretty much it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, I can see that just sort of as a potential of the threat there, but not ever having to pay off necessarily.
Uh-huh.
A line that I liked was, Sawyer, you know, is there a forensic hatch that I know about, where he kind of does this CSI sort of reference. So I thought that was kind of enjoyable. I mean, we're already kind of joking about at this point in the series about how there seems to be a hatch for everything. You know, there's going to be a music hatch. There's going to be a food hatch. There's going to be, you know, just any little thing is going to be a hatch. What did you think about the diamonds? Do you think the diamonds are going to be a factor? Are they going to come back?
No, the diamond is like the Maltese Falcon. It's the thing in the mystery movie that is the plot revolves around, but it's not
It's
the plot.
A MacGuffin.
Right.
So I can definitely see that, although I think it's kind of interesting. You know, it was a nice touch for Sawyer to just sort of give that up, given that, you know, it sort of says we're here. We're deciding that we're going to live here, and that's meaningless at this point. But I actually like throughout the episode the way that they revealed what it was, what the MacGuffin was. You know, first it's the bag, then it's the little dolls, the Russian dolls, and then it's a little black sack, and then it's the diamonds. Like, we get to watch over time what is it that all of everybody's all excited about.
Yeah.
So I thought that was handled pretty well, pretty nicely as well. I loved that Boone is still looking for a pen when they do the...
I know. I like that too.
Because that little thing, again, brings you right back to the visceral nature of that plane crash from the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And I still feel the impact of watching that fantastic pilot. Anything else good or bad that stood out for you in this episode?
The line that Shannon says to Boone, if you would just quit flirting with random guys, maybe we could...
Right.
Do something.
The question, I remember at the time that people were all excited, like, well, maybe there's an issue with Boone's sexuality.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, he had a crush on her. They got together. I mean, I don't think there's anything necessarily
to
that.
No, she was angry at him. She was ranting at him. You know, she was really mad that they had lost their seats in first class. And I think when anybody is that irritated with somebody, they just, you know, say things like that.
Why not just hit a little low, a little below the belt? And, well, the line that I liked was when, you know, Hurley's trying to explain why he thinks it's a smoke monster is because Echo said, you're next. And Sarah's like, oh, no, he didn't mean you're next. He meant we're all next. We're all going to go. And Hurley's like, that's not really much better. But I think it's a significant question, because we're all still next. Has that major judgment come, or is that what's to come in season six for Lost?
I would think that something like that would have to come at the end, because it's so huge.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that was a significant line. And again, still coming in what is otherwise a pretty silly episode. Well, let's put the silly episode behind us and move on to another potentially dangerous conversation, because it is a Kate episode. But let's talk about Left Behind. What did you think?
Kate has a horrible mother.
Okay. Well, maybe so that may or may not excuse some of the issues that we have with Kate.
I don't know. I mean, how does a woman choose her husband over her child?
Or an abusive husband or a bad person.
Right.
Well, you know, on one hand, I think clearly they wanted to show really how emotionally wrecked Kate is. I mean, she already had daddy issues. Now she has mommy issues. But the whole thing where the mom says, you know, you don't choose who you love, that is something that a person in an abusive relationship would say, you know. But in this case, despite the fact that Kate tried to save her from it, you know, she wasn't ready to make that break. The other thing is, I think that was true that her mom said, is you didn't do it for me, really. You did it for you. You know, you wanted the release. You wanted to feel better about it or something. And so to that extent, I think that there was something to what her mom said, that this action that you're being chased around the country for is really wasn't something you were trying to do for me. You were also doing it out of your own sense of vengeance, possibly.
Well, that I can see. Mm. I mean, I understand where she's coming from, but it's, you know, it's still not really cool what she did.
No, I wouldn't call it cool. We have some other really interesting things happening this episode, for me at least. I mean, a couple episodes back, we had John Locke making excuses, of all things, for Jack. In this episode, John talks about how he really wanted to make a strong case for Kate. I wanted you, Kate, to come with us, but then they told me what you did, and they're not a forgiving people. So,
see, that conversation is another demonstration to me that there are two Lockes.
Really?
Yes.
Because, you know, he's already part of the team, or he's already deeply invested in it.
What he says sounds like it's coming out of somebody else's mouth.
Well,
you know?
Well, anytime you have something where the other character is just kind of looking at you like, what the heck are you talking about? And we're having that same reaction.
You're right, right.
I can definitely see, yeah, okay. So maybe, yes, at this point already, there's something a little more mysterious happening with Locke. I thought that this was an odd episode for Juliet and Kate, obviously, being stuck together like that. But here we have Juliet demonstrating she's a serious, tough broad.
She's tough. I know I would not want to get into a fight with her.
She has lightning fast reflexes, whether she's being, you know, ambushed in the room or just everything that she does. And she says, this is the fourth, don't worry about it, this is the fourth time my shoulder has been relocated. And we are still trying to figure out Juliet's character. Where in her past is this martial arts ninja training?
Exactly.
I don't know how
could she have had her shoulder dislocated four times? Yeah.
Even when we go back and we see her flashback in her time on the island, we don't get the sense that it was a very physical, you know, violent period in her life. So that is kind of an interesting gap with her. But the other thing that comes up with Juliet's character is it turns out this whole thing being handcuffed to Kate was a ruse because she didn't want to feel like she gets left behind again. Mm-hmm. And I remember at the time that line was delivered, I was like, oh, God, come on. That's a little ridiculous. But looking back, remember our complaints at the end of season 5. Why does she revert into this abandonment issues kind of girl? Well, here you go. I think that on the wall in the writer's room next to Juliet's name has to be abandonment issues. That has to be one of her big bullet points.
Yeah.
And whether or not you agree with, again, the turn that she took in the season 5 finale, just as we discovered earlier on in this rewatch of season 3, they've at least been consistent that that's why she had to go, she put on that little show.
Well, she had to handcuff herself to Kate. Remember? Ben gave her orders. That's how she ended up back in the camp.
Yeah, I mean, yes, later on, that's true. That's the other reason, which is it's part of an overall plan that she had to infiltrate and, I think, find out how many women were pregnant or anything. I think there was even a missing piece, a little short video or a short movie that they did on the web that touched on that conversation as well. But yeah, okay, so there's something else going on there. That's true. Anyway, I'm just trying to like the season finale a little bit better, I guess.
Well, one of Kate's lines that I love in this episode is, welcome to the wonderful world of not knowing what the hell is going on.
You like that line?
Yes, I do.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, again, that's sort of season 1, very flat, one-dimensional Kate, where she's just whining about not being included and I want to go with you. So I thought that was a little too cheesy. But I guess that's true. I mean, that's sort of, you know, showing up to Juliet. And as we just discussed, Juliet actually knows what's going on. You know, there's now an additional meaning to that line, definitely. This was a significant episode for the smoke monster.
Yes, yes. We don't know what it is.
Well, do you think that she's telling the truth? That, you know, that the others... They knew that they could stop it with the fence, but they really don't know where it comes from.
I believe that only the hostiles really know the deal with the original
island inhabitants that Ben isn't even necessarily a part of. But yet he knows how to summon it, and he knows that the role that it plays.
Well, you can know about it, but you cannot know the history of it. You cannot know what its full purpose was. And you can use it to your own ends, but you don't have to understand it exactly.
Right. Well, I mean, I remember that the metaphor was drawn earlier that it's kind of like an attack dog. On one hand, you know how to open the gate and let the sucker go, but if it ends up eating chomping on your leg, you know, you can't really control it. So that's true. But for smoke monsters, definitely Left Behind was a good episode as well. The other thing about Left Behind, I think, is that it's got some great one-liners. You know, of course, Sawyer's involved in a good number of them.
I don't like blankets.
Hey there, little baby, you know, just the way that he's totally awkward about dealing with kids. I thought that was kind of cool. And the scene, you know, even Yoon-jun Kim had a brilliant scene when she's on the beach. And
she's laughing with Jin,
And she actually looks over at Sawyer and she has a very genuine smile on her face. And Sawyer smiles back and then her face just
freezes,
turns stone cold. And he's like, well, I guess I'm not going to get the Korean vote. But just the way that her face, you know, just kind of melts away, I really enjoyed that a lot. And, of course, Hurley chiming in with the, we all just want to eat. laugh and have fun and forget that we're totally screwed. I mean, yeah. You're all next. I mean, an offhand line that has a significant amount of weight behind it.
You know, we don't even realize, when this first aired, we didn't even realize how right he was.
Yes, there's a war coming, or the freighters are coming. Right. I mean, the beginning of the end. Uh-huh. It definitely gets a lot darker for everyone on the island. So a very cool line for Hurley. Anything else caught your attention in this episode?
Walking After Midnight makes another appearance.
Ah, yes. I mean, again, as far as the musical motifs for our characters, Kate's definitely rears its head in this episode as well. Mm-hmm. So definitely love the music on the show. Well, I think that's it. That's our thoughts for these three episodes of Season 3 of Lost. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll hear from
you all, everybody.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Kelly, and I'm a new listener to your podcast. I just wanted to let you know how much I was enjoying it. My husband and I are watching Lost, actually, for the first time. We missed it when it was first on ABC. And we're just finishing up with Season 3 and starting Season 4. And it is so fun to listen to your podcast as we're going along. And even though sometimes you guys talk about things that have happened that we haven't seen yet, it doesn't give much away, honestly, because Lost is so complicated and so overlapping, and there's so many details that even if you hear little spoilers here and there, it is still so exciting to watch it when we turn on the next episode. And I can't imagine having to wait weeks between episodes if we hadn't had it on Hulu or we're watching it right now. So thanks again for your podcast. Keep up the good work. Bye-bye.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Christine from Ohio. It was really neat meeting you at the HIP Festival, and I just wanted you to encourage all your listeners who are already, if they're listening to your podcast, they're already huge Lost fans. But we had the trip of a lifetime coming to Oahu. We had so much fun. We walked around Otterville and the beach camp and Hofstrawler Funeral Parlor. We ate at Mr. Cluck's. And got to go see two of the hatches and actually go in one of them. And it was just the funnest trip ever. We'll always remember it. We're even talking about going again. It was not that expensive. It was pretty reasonable. And we ate cheap. One of the best meals we've ever had in our lives was at a truck on the side of the road. It was really good. But anybody who's thinking of going just needs to go. It was only like $1,000 a person. You wouldn't think it would be that cheap, but and you can eat cheap too. So it was so much fun, and it was nice to meet you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
We start things off there with a couple of voicemails from The Lost Line, Kelly and Christine. Now, Kelly, she's watching Season 3 for the first time, but she's still following along with us. That's kind of interesting.
That takes a lot of self-control to not look at spoilers and to find out what's going on.
Well, I think it's interesting that you can enjoy that, even though we're making reference to Season 5, Season 4, and that it's still kind of enjoyable. I agree with her that there is so much going on at Lost that even if you hear something like that, you have no idea how much more there is, so you don't mind it all that much. And Christine, yes, it was great to meet you here at the Hawaii International Film Festival, hi, Celebration of Lost, and we've met many fans that came just for that event, and we continue to meet fans that just come to enjoy the Lost experience. And I would definitely agree with Christine, if there's any year where you're going to get on that plane and come check it out.
There are so many people here this year just to check out the filming and the sites.
We've enjoyed meeting as many of them as we could. We like to give advice as to where the locations are, and if we can't meet up, we like to sometimes help you find them filming, which you're only going to be able to do until I'd say March or April or maybe even May of next year, but that's pretty much it. I'm glad that it wasn't a very expensive trip for Christine. Hawaii is not known for being affordable, but again, if you're a hardcore Lost fan, this is the time to come, and in January, there's still a tiny sliver of hope that they're going to be doing the Brunch on the Beach premiere.
I hope so. That would be the highlight of my year.
That would be the pinnacle of the Lost fans' experience. In any case, let's let's move on to feedback on each episode, starting with the man from Tallahassee.
Blue Dog 1121 writes, I remember being so shocked at the reveal of how John ended up in a wheelchair, but this episode brings up a bigger mystery, which John points out. Why isn't Ben healing faster? And really, why did he get a tumor in the first place? To me, this links something nice back home from season 4. Jack gets appendicitis. Ben and Jack are the only people, besides Aaron with his mystery fever back in season 1, I think it was, who have gotten sick on the island. Does that link them somehow? Is the island or Jacob or the other guy angry at both of them? Or maybe they're given illnesses as a means to an end for the island. Ben is given a spinal tumor, so Ben and Jack will be brought together, perhaps. Jack is given appendicitis, too. I don't know. Shippers would probably have theories. Just brainstorming.
Well, that's an interesting thought. I mean, I still think that the deal with the vaccines or the shots that everyone's given, mm-hmm. that's not necessarily been fully explained. But no. It's true. There's only a certain number of people that have dealt with illnesses on the island. And it's interesting to point out that it is specifically Ben and then Jack who actually needs his own surgery
right.
on the island. I'm wondering if that's something that's going to come up later on. Rich in Cleveland writes on the blog, I love the way Ben and Locke play mind games with each other in Ben's bungalow. Ben doesn't have his customary success, though, which makes me wonder if he's actually dealing with Locke. Here. This will become more evident later in The Brig, but consider why Locke is on his blow up all means of escape tour. Is it really to ensure purity, as he claimed, or is it to prevent anyone else from reaching the island, thereby ending the trial of humanity? It was the arrival of the Black Rock that made AJ declare his desire to kill Jacob. If AJ can prevent renewal from either reproduction or repopulation, he can use his abilities to corrupt the rest and turn them against one another until he rids the island of all humanity. And checkmate.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great. I mean, we all believe that Locke just doesn't want to leave the island. He's going to destroy any way to get off the island because he wants to stay there.
Uh-huh.
But now you have that larger question about what's been going on the island. Maybe he was trying to stop something else. I definitely like your thinking.
Chris writes, the man from Tallahassee has to be one of my all-time favorites, at least in my top 10. There are shocking moments galore. Jack is so cold to Kate when he goes in to tell her he is leaving. I was right there with her thinking, what is wrong with him? I am a sworn Jader, but, you know, Kate kind of deserved that. And Anthony Cooper, I missed that character. He was so evil. I remember my jaw dropping when he pushed John out the window. John looking at the wheelchair for the first time with his bruised up purple face, the expression he had looking at that chair, knowing he'd never get out of it, so heartbreaking. I kind of hope that the season 5 plan was successful and takes us back to when all our losties are alive again. That would mean that Anthony Cooper would be alive again and he can die another horrible death.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, yeah, you got father issues and they don't get much more complex than Locke's dad.
Yeah.
And definitely not a good guy. So that'd be kind of a great way to sort of get another dig in at him. But I'm glad that Chris puts it in his top 10. I'm not sure if I put it in that high, but I definitely enjoyed it. Nate in Ohio emailed and says, I was really disappointed in the character turn for Jack. That started in this episode and continued all the way until late in the season, and I have to blame the writers for this. Here we have the hero and leader of the survivors who has saved numerous lives and was dedicated to getting everyone rescued. To have him just give up, forget about everyone else, and decide to go home was lame. This Is Jack a Traitor storyline would continue until the last few episodes of the season. Then in the season finale, he is back to being the Jack we know, courageously leading the survivors to the radio tower and masterminding the downfall of the others. I really didn't feel like the Is Jack a Traitor storyline fit with his overall story, but was written simply for the sake of trying to trick the audience one more time. The only other time I was this disappointed with the writing for Jack was in the season 5 finale, when he revealed his reason for blowing up the Jughead was because he had lost Kate. Lame, lame, lame.
Yeah, I share your frustration, especially with the season 5 part.
Well, you know, the thing where he catches the football and he's all chummy with them and everything, that was a great mind, you know, blowing event for us as viewers, but then when you really think about Jack's trip up until that point, how could he go from being, you know, really down in the dumps and making this terrible deal just because his heart is breaking to playing football with Tom? I mean, I think that was a great visual that they did, but then for them to try and write their way out of that situation was, I think, a little awkward.
I kind of agree.
But on the other hand, the comparison to season 5, once again, Jack kind of goes a little overboard. He wants to blow up the entire island because of the way things went with Kate.
Yeah.
So here he's doing something because of Kate. There he's doing something for Kate. If anything, at least they're being consistent.
That's true. Now, on to expose. Tom in New Jersey writes, I will say that I, like Ryan, am an expose apologist. Woo-hoo! I remember being a bit frustrated that this episode interrupted much more interesting plot lines that were unfolding, but taken on its own merits, it is a good little story. Pulpy and silly, but entertaining. That said, I'm not going to try and defend Nikki and Paolo. They were both really annoying characters, sort of reminiscent of Boone and Shannon, in that they were both seemed like they just came out of a soap opera, very obnoxious and catty.
I would agree that, you know, Nikki and Paolo were not the best introductions. We've said it many times. But if there's any way for a character to go, this is probably it. And, yeah. You know, I think Pulpy is a good description
yes,
of expose.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Absolutely. Jason B. in Delaware writes, just like you, Ryan, I have always enjoyed expose. Great, well-crafted episode. It's got mystery, suspense, sex, adventure, humor, everything you need, and it seems to be a real shout-out to Alfred Hitchcock. Yep. The final twist at the end with the eyes opening with the dirt falling on her is a twist straight out of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and the suspense that they built around How Did They Die reminds me of any Hitchcock mystery.
Yes, well
absolutely.
Said.
Well said.
Mike in Virginia writes, I know I'm in the minority, but I liked this episode, even the first time around. I really liked the way they integrated Nikki and Paolo into the storyline like they were there all along. The little touches like Boone asking Nikki for a pen during the initial crash and then being there for Jack's live together, die alone speech were really well done. Seeing more of Dr. Arce and even Ethan showing up like he was there from the beginning were also great touches. And I thought Sawyer throwing the diamonds in with them before they were buried was just one more step on his road from bad guy to good guy. Then, of course, the fact they were mistaken for dead and buried alive was something out of a Twilight Zone episode.
All right. Well, you know, that's one thing that he mentioned that I thought was great about this episode is it was an excuse to do a lot of things, mm-hmm. among them bringing back, you know, bit characters that we missed.
Right.
You know, Dr. Arce and Ethan and all of that. So, again, many reasons why Exposé deserves at least a little love. Yann from France writes, great Twilight Zone episode. Oops, I mean Lost. I love when Nikki opens her eyes at the last second. So cliche and yet so fun. Poor Nikki and Paolo, though, nobody liked them. The flashback is handled well. The story is fun, and yet something disturbed me. I don't know why, but Darlton said it would be seen as a key episode eventually, representative of the show. So how? Is it supposed to be the representation of Live Together, Die Alone? Most importantly, though, this is, I think, the only standalone episode I would show to friends who don't know anything about Lost. It has the fun, the drama, the island, the relationships, a very good episode, and a great farewell for Nikki and Paolo, but they don't beat Echo's farewell or Charlie's. Mm. So do you think that this episode is something you'd show to a new viewer of Lost?
No.
I think there's too many inside jokes,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
But it is kind of a neat catch-up because it does, again, you know, just like the other 48 days, it yeah. spans so much time that in terms of a crash course of what's going on in Lost, I can see how that works. Now, do you think that the deaths of Nikki and Paolo are some of the greatest deaths on Lost?
Actually, kind of, yeah. Hmm. Because consider this. I mean, Echo goes through that spiritual awakening. He becomes a priest. He builds a church and he gets slammed into a tree.
True.
So undignified. And I mean, Charlie had a heroic death, but consider like Ana Lucia and Libby. They were shot.
In the same scene. They both go at the same time.
You know, they weren't given a chance, you know, really. And I think Nikki and Paolo were written in a very funny, ironic, Hitchcockian way. And I think, you know, if I had to pick the character, you know, if I had to pick a character death, it would be theirs.
Yeah, actually, if there's anything to really be upset about this episode is that a well-written death went to them
yeah.
and not somebody that we really, really liked.
Vera in Russia writes, although Nikki and Paolo were both dull characters that nobody really cared about, the episode itself was actually not bad. It just seemed to me out of place. What was the point of that episode anyway? Maybe the purpose was to show that not only the main characters, but all who crashed on the island and were not taken by the others, were living exceptionally dysfunctional lives. Apart from this, I like the piece of advice that Locke gave to Paolo about saving the trouble of digging a hole to hide whatever he was hiding. It was a Matryoshka doll, by the way, and being Russian, I love that reference. Locke says, things don't stay buried on this island. I never paid attention to this phrase the first time I saw it, but now, after 5 seasons, with all that stuff about bodies needing to be buried, it takes on special significance, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think that's a great observation, and we've been seeing a lot of attention paid as to whether a body was left out or uh-huh. whether a body was buried. And especially
or burned.
Now that we have, or burned, and especially now that we have an anti-Jacob or some other, you know, entity that can perhaps take their form, that becomes a very significant conversation. So great comments there, Vera, all the way from Russia. I love that. Terry B. emails and says, I have mixed feelings about Exposé. The story itself wasn't too bad, and it was nice to take a stroll down memory lane, but the whole purpose of it was just to kill off Nikki and Paulo. That just seems like a waste of an episode. But I like that Charlie told Sun about how he pretended to be one of the others abducting her, and was that the smoke monster sound right before the spiders attacked Nikki and Paulo?
Yes.
Absolutely. I think from France noted on the blog that Darlton even confirmed that the smoke monster took that step, but the question is, why were they significant and why necessarily in that form? But you are not imagining things.
Yes.
But I can see that, you know, it might be seen as a waste of an episode. Jen in Chicago also left the shortest comment ever, said, didn't watch it, didn't want to watch it again, couldn't see the point, couldn't bring myself to do it. So again, there are certainly a lot of people that have issues with the expose.
Sasha in Indiana writes, I actually like expose. The chills at the end are enticing to me, but I noticed that when Paulo enters the underground hatch to hide the diamonds, he doesn't seem to close the hatch doors behind him. Then Ben and Juliet arrive. I would think that they would have suspected someone being down there.
Now, I know that when you watch the episode with closed captions, when they first come in, when you see Ben and Juliet come in, they make a mention of something like, who left the door open or why was this open?
Yeah, so, Pickett was down here or something.
I think that answers Sasha's question. On the other hand, I remember when this episode aired, there are still a lot of people who don't believe that that's the only entrance into this hatch, that they must have been a back door, because the way they filmed them coming in, it seems like they're coming from a different direction rather than down the ladder.
Yeah, I thought so too.
So, you know, you've got that blast door map that Locke found. Maybe there's more ways to get around, but fun question, Sasha. Now let's move on to Left Behind with a couple of Lost Line calls.
Aloha, Ryan and Jen. This is Brennan from Hammond, Louisiana, with some comments on Exposé and Left Behind. Now, on Exposé, there's not a whole lot to say, except, you know, Billy Dee Williams, awesome. Great to see him in the beginning. And that's, you know, all I have for that episode. But in Left Behind, the first thing that struck me was poor Juliet, the waitress. If she ever makes it back to the mainland, she needs to not go into waitressing. Every time she tries to bring somebody food on the island, she gets attacked. The cool things about this episode were we got a lot more into the smoke monster. And we saw camera flashes from the smoke monster, and we're left wondering why the smoke monster let Juliet and Kate live after, you know, apparently finding them. Apparently hiding those trees doesn't really save you. And we, of course, got to see the true purpose of the sonic fence and why it was there. The only other cool thing about the episode was Sawyer casually mentioned some Dharma A1, but if you look, there's actually a bottle with a Dharma symbol on it that says A1 for the steak sauce when they're having their little boar feast at the end. Thought that was cool. Love the podcast, guys. Between you, Jay, and Jack, I never know who to go to first after a new episode. Love you guys. Y'all keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. This is Zymox from New Jersey. So I'm going through watching rewatching these shows, and something that occurred to me with the season 5 eyes that I have. Is it possible when Locke comes to talk to Kate and basically tells her that the others, they're not very good at forgiving? We all assume it's because she killed her stepfather or her father, but could it be possible that they know about the role she played in the nuclear device going into the Swan Station and blowing up the Swan Station? Can it be going back that far? And you know, I mean, who knows? Locke, you don't know what he is at this point, if he is other Jacob or un-Jacob or un-Locke or Flock or whatever you want to call him, or if he really is John Locke. So it's kind of realistic. And I'm starting to think that this list that Jacob has made and how some of these key characters are not on it, it's part of the chess game. Jacob is putting characters where they need to be. That's it. Thank you very much for your dedication to Sparkle Motion.
Mahalo for those calls. So Brennan definitely pointing out that Juliet has issues with food.
Yeah, she can't make make muffins. She burns her muffins, and that grilled cheese that she brought to Jack really kind of looked a little
right, and
toasty.
Then she gets attacked for bringing that food. Uh-huh. So definitely good observation. Hopefully she isn't a waitress in another life. And yes, Dharma A1, a nice catch there. Now, why do you think the smoke monster let them go if it could have gotten to them in that tree? Were they not ready for judgment? Were they necessarily good people? What do you think?
He probably saw something worthwhile in both of them.
Although he came a second time for them, too.
That's true.
So that is, and they were stopped by the sonic fence. I mean, just like Locke, you know, the smoke monster had one sort of take at him and then a second take at him.
That's true.
Could have ended differently had not someone interceded. So, but interesting question. Our second call from Vimark, I guess, or Mark. Sorry if we butcher your name. But also someone on the bandwagon saying that already they're aware of what we're going to see coming up in seasons 4 and 5. You think so?
Yes.
That they're not forgiving people because Kate was a party to the detonation of the Swans or whatever that was back in 1977?
Yeah, I definitely think that whoever Locke is presenting himself as in front of Kate, he definitely has an idea of what's been going on in
or
the
again,
last...
what happened, because we're talking about what happened in 1977. Good golly, my brain is starting to twist into knots. Well, let's move on to additional commentary on Left Behind. Gavin right here in Pearl City writes, I love how this episode foreshadowed the leader that Sawyer would become in season 5 as part of Dharma.
Yeah.
For the first time in his life, he did good things for other people and learned how satisfying it could be to be part of a community. Juliet has a lot of combat skills for a doctor, though, don't you think? Definitely. I totally forgot about how she handcuffed herself to Kate because she didn't want to be left behind again. The small moment helps to clarify Juliet's abandonment issues that seemed rushed in the season 5 finale. While her motivations about detonating the bomb may still be suspect, at least I can better understand her line of thinking, as we certainly agreed. But definitely, you know, Sawyer, he is the leader. So he kind of played out the way Hurley wanted him to grow.
The Simple Man in Phoenix writes, Left Behind remains one of my favorite episodes for the Kate-Juliet interactions, although the flashback doesn't do much for me. In fact, I would say that the scene where Juliet stares down Smokey behind the protection of the sonic fence is one of my top 5 favorite visuals in all of Lost. What do you guys think of the connection between the white flashes from Smokey when Juliet and Kate were in the banyan tree and the beautiful bright light that Locke told Echo about? The white flashes make me shy away from a 2 smoke monsters theory, but I still don't know what they mean for Locke's vision.
Well, definitely that visual is great, and the way that Juliet fixes her gaze on the smoke monster does not look like someone who's necessarily afraid of it. Just sort of, you know, I got your number sort of look. So I definitely like that. But yeah, I don't think there's 2 smoke monsters.
No.
I think that, again, as Locke's experience was different from Echo's experience, you know, that is not what I saw. It presents itself differently depending on how things are going to turn out with you in terms of being judged. But definitely some good questions. Bonita in Atlanta writes on the blog, Kate not being sorry is underscored and makes me wonder if repentance is not one of the categories on the lists. The list could be what the others use to determine how to manipulate the Losties and anyone else for the bigger picture. Kate and Juliet chained together was a clever metaphor for the way the fate of the others and the Losties is linked as well.
Well, we do know that Echo died because he was not sorry for stealing.
Right, and Ben is allowed to live at when he gets judged for Alex because he is very sorry. I mean, I'm not sure if we can ever believe how sorry Ben actually is, but he seemed pretty repentant there. So I think, yeah, I mean, if you're going to put up the 10 commandments of Smoky Land, that's going to be one of the things, I think, on the list that determines whether or not you're a good person.
Jen in Chicago writes, I didn't much care for this episode. It completely felt like filler. There was absolutely nothing accomplished in any of the 3 storylines to advance the plot. It was like a little detour that led nowhere. I don't know why Kate episodes have to be so bad. Evangeline Lilly is incredibly talented, but the writers just butcher her backstories. I definitely blame them, not her. I'm all for character development episodes, but I felt like there wasn't even any of that. So frustrating.
Well, so not a fan of Left Behind, and I said she wasn't a fan of Exposé either. I mean, I think that, you know, Kate does get sort of the short end of the stick as far as writing goes.
Yeah,
and I think
agree.
That if there's anything that really rubbed me the wrong way on this episode is that, you know, ever since I heard someone else commenting that in any scene, and not just in Lost, in any scene, television, movies, if someone's running, particularly running through the jungle, they have to fall down and get picked back up again. So that happens in the scene, and they happen to fall down in a mud pit.
Yeah,
and so they get to run around covered in mud. And, you know, some parts of this episode definitely...
I know, I felt like the first fist fight was really kind of... cheap too.
Yeah, just sort of like a cat fight in the jungle, and they're all, you know, they're gonna get all wet, woohoo. But on the other hand, I think that, you know, as Kate's episodes go, this wasn't the absolute worst. I mean, I guess that's faint praise, but to really get an understanding of how badly she was betrayed by her mom, or at least how deeply that was felt, I think was, you know, kind of illustrative. It wasn't as bad as why Jack has tattoos, for example.
Exactly. So, yeah,
well, that's all the feedback we can share today, but we enjoyed all of the emails and phone calls and blog comments that we got. And before we go, we wanted to take a moment to specifically thank the listeners who left great feedback for us on our podcast on iTunes, and that includes Scott in Tucson, NC Losty, Brett AR, Wasea 73, David from Atlanta, Timberwolf 421, D20 Girl, Leo178, and Nervebreaker. Thanks very much sharing how much you love our show, because really that explains how much we love to make the show and why we really appreciate hearing from you.
Now, remember, every email, whether we can include it in the podcast or not, will enter you to win some really, really special prizes. We're going to be doing a drawing at the end of the Season 3 rewatch for a limited edition Benjamin Linus bobblehead doll, which is a Comic-Con exclusive item from Entertainment Earth.
Also, a copy of the Season 3 and Season 4 albums from the Others Lost band. That's the great band based in Massachusetts that writes the song based on every episode of Lost.
And a copy of Nikki Stafford's book, Finding Lost.
That's right. So get those emails in. Now, looking ahead, next week we'll share another special treat, audio from the second masterclass on Lost from the Hawaii International Film Festival. That topic was bringing the design of each episode together, and the panel featured production designer Zach Grobler, director of photography John Bartley, construction coordinator Michael Crow, and location manager and associate producer Jim Triplett.
Then the following week, for our scheduled rewatch podcast, we will cover Season 3, episodes 16, 17, and 18. That's One of Us for Juliet, Catch 22 for Desmond, and DOC for Sun.
So as you enjoy the second of three masterclasses of Lost, please remember to pop in those DVDs as soon as you can and send us your feedback for us to include in the November 22nd show. You can send your thoughts via email to lost@hawaiiup.com. You can post it on the blog at hawaiiup.com/lost or call the Lost line at 815-310-0808.
Coming up in about 3 minutes, we will have The Forward Cabin. But first, paving the way, we have a little musical interlude. This is a song by the Others Lost band based on one of the episodes we just discussed, Exposé. And the song is Buried Alive.
Nick is my girl. We found the pearl, and now she's buried alive. Some rich guy. Nikki, I lied to you because I was scared to be alone. Paolo, I talked to Doc Ars, and the spider he caught would turn you to stone. But I forgot that more would come and leave me paralyzed. Nothing.
Buried Alive by the Others Lost band, based on the 14th episode of Season 3, Exposé. You can find out more information on the band and hear more of their music over at myspace.com/theotherslostband.
Now, folks, if you are in Boston or in the surrounding area, they are coming to your town this week on Friday, November 13th. Friday the 13th, they're going to be performing at the New England Fan Experience. Now, the New England Fan Experience is a three-day sci-fi pop culture event, and other guests include Leonard Nimoy and John DeLancey from Star Trek, James Hong from Hawaii Five-O and Kung Fu, and Heather Ulrich from The Sound of Music and Logan's Run, and that's in addition to the great folks of the Others Lost band. Now, it's taking place this Friday, again, at the Courtyard Marriott on Tremont Street, and for details, you can go to www.nefanx.com. That's www.nefanx.com. Now, it's spoiler time, and if you don't want to know, now's the time to turn us off. Well, it's been a busy couple couple of weeks here on the island, and we'll start with Brooke, the California fan. Now, she already sent in the report from the Kahala shoot that we covered in the last Transmission podcast, and she found Lost at work last Monday at the First Presbyterian Church of Honolulu at the Ko'olau Golf Club in Waimanalo. Now, there wasn't much to see as they were filming inside the church kitchen, but the cast trailers and some friendly crew members did let it slip that it was a scene focused on Saeed, or Naveen Andrews.
Guess we'll see him cooking again.
Yes, he's going to show off some of those culinary skills. Now, there were also some other surprisingly familiar faces. The scene also apparently included Omar, that's our friend from the Frady, and Kimi, another Frady friend. And if those were the original actors, it would be Anthony Azizi and Kevin Duran, but this was based mostly on the trailers. Now, when we last saw these two gentlemen in the season 4 finale, There's No Place Like Home, Omar was blown up by a grenade that was kicked over by Kimi, and Kimi was stabbed to death in the orchid by Ben. So I guess maybe they're going to get a second chance here. Also on the set, John Hawks. Now, he's the actor that was playing a new character named Lennon. And just as a reminder, Lennon's casting call described the character as scruffy, edgy, charismatic, and slightly stir-crazy. Lennon can be deferential when it's called for. He's the spokesperson or translator for the president of a foreign corporation, and he's a wily negotiator far more powerful than his lowly position would seem to indicate. So
wow,
it'd be kind of great to see what he's up to. Now, last Friday, Lost was back at Waipahu High School. Michael Emerson once again was there as Ben, but the rest of the cast that were present are even more intriguing. According to Patty from New York, a visiting fan, mixed amongst many backpack and book-toting students in the scene was Tanya Raymond, Ben's previously deceased daughter, Alex. So she's going to be back. She also saw junior high science teacher Leslie Arst, a.k.a. Daniel Roebuck. And finally, a recent addition to the cast, as mentioned actually by Carlton Cuse, I think, on Twitter, William Atherton,
right,
who's an actor's actor. Definitely.
Yeah, he was Templeton Peck in Ghostbusters. He was in Real Genius. He was in Die Hard. You'll know him when you see him.
And of course, his character on the show is going to be Principal Reynolds. We actually went by the next day to see them filming, so we spotted him and that name on the trailer. And Terry O'Quinn was actually there as well. So to me, I just sort of like setting the scene. You've got Locke and Ben. Now, they were there in a previous spoiler as filming the episode The Substitute. So we kind of suspected that one or both of them are actually substitute teachers at this school. Now you add in Dr. Arst, who, as we know, was a teacher. And we've got Alex as a student, maybe even kind of a feisty student, maybe a troublesome student. So in my head, I'm just kind of seeing this vision of, like, I don't know, like Ferris Bueller slash The Breakfast Club, kind of a whole John Hughes episode of Lost. And in fact, this episode is being co-directed by Mario Van Peebles, who's done a lot of films and a lot of other movies.
Yeah, New Jack City.
Most definitely.
He actually did a bunch of stuff in the early 90s.
Right, so he's going to be having a hand in this episode, but it sounds very intriguing. This past Monday, they were all over the island. First, they were at Hawaii Medical Center East on Liliha Street. That's otherwise known as St. Sebastian Hospital. Now, this scene took place in the emergency room, but I talked to some nurses that were on a smoke break, and they had said they spotted Jack, or Matthew Fox, Saeed, Naveen Andrews, and his girlfriend, so presumably Nadia, or Andrea Gabriel. Now, that same day, they were also at Police Beach out at Papailoa near Haleiwa, and that's the classic beach camp set. And even though it was really raining that day, they were able to shoot a few scenes with Ben, Frank, Jeff Fahey, Ilana, Zuleika Robinson, Sun, Yunjin Kim, and Miles, Ken Leong. Now, that's kind of an intriguing addition, because Miles would then have to be back in 2007 already. We last saw him back at the Swan construction set. Now, in one scene, Frank was gathering some wood and digging in the sand. In another scene, he was toting a gun. Then it was Ben's turn to dig around in the sand. And finally, Ilana had Ben at gunpoint and was marching him down the beach. Finally, that same day, there was another shoot at Paradise Park. And to this, I owe Denise, the hiking fan. And he saw them over at the Manoa Falls Trail, actually off the path. You couldn't see much, but she saw a couple of kids, a young boy and a somewhat older girl, who I am going to guess is Zach and Emma, the long-lost kids with the others. And also, there were shots that were being set up after lunch, and they were going to include Cindy, yes, our missing stewardess once again, and Claire, which is always interesting to read. Now, finally, on Friday, my birthday, it was a very busy day back at the beach camp at Police Beach. And now I say thanks to visiting fan Damien, who just that day found our podcast and emailed us. And so he was able to provide a very detailed report. He spent the whole day watching them work again in the rain. And so we can share what we can. Even though English wasn't his first language, the gist was pretty exciting. Sun, Ben, Frank, Ilana, and Miles were there, as before, at first. In one scene, Sun takes off her jacket and puts it in her tent just as Ilana emerges from the back of the camp, storming towards Sawyer's tent. When she sits down next to it, Miles, who was tending to a fire, gets up and heads toward another tent, but gives Ilana some kind of secret signal. So, not sure what's going on there. In the next take, again, perhaps out of sequence when they film this stuff, Ilana comes out of the woods carrying a gun, and Ben is also there behind her, also carrying a gun. And finally, the scene that took the longest to shoot was a pretty big one. We see Sun working on her tent, Frank is tending to a large fire, and they call action, and Jack, Hurley, and Richard emerge on the beach. Mm. Yes, our friends lost previously in the 70s somehow are back. Sun sees them and runs over. She's followed by Ben, Frank, Ilana, and Miles. Sun gives Hurley a hug and Jack, and everyone gathers together, although Ben is kind of standing off somewhat, still looking a little beaten or perhaps as a prisoner. And Jack and Frank shake hands. So again, I think we're finally seeing the long-promised reunification of all of our characters here in the present, 2007. Now, the next scene that they did shoot looked like a close-up of a woman with dark, straight hair leaning against Sawyer's tent, and Damien is confident that that woman was Claire, looking especially tough. Hmm. So she's back, and we're all back in the present. So yes, season 6 is rolling along. This, I believe, was filming for episode 7 of season 6 as we move here into November. So thanks again to Brooke from California, Patty from New York, Denise S., and Damien for their reports for this Forward Cabin. That's it for our filming reports, though, so that means that's it for this episode of The Transmission.
Remember, your homework is to watch Season 3, Episodes 16, 17, and 18, and get your feedback to us by Friday, November 20th. This show is powered by you, absolutely, so please send us an email, comment on the blog, call the last line, post a note on iTunes, even tweet us on Twitter. We love hearing from you.
You can email us at lost@hawaiiup.com, comment at hawaiiup.com/lost, call 815-310-0808, or as Jen mentioned, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Hawaii.
And I'm at Mrs. Hawaii.
Now, next week, we'll continue our Hawaii International Film Festival series with audio from the second of three master classes on Lost. And again, the topic is bringing the design of each episode together.
Then the week after that, we will continue with our season 3 review.
And we'll talk to you then, folks. Everybody, enjoy.
Stay lost.
Stay lost.
Aloha.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lost Podcasting Network. Get all your favorite Lost podcasts in one feed at lostcasts.blogspot.com.